Hi, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Zentertainment Talk Radio and on the web here at www.zentertainment.org. My name is Joe Davidson, and my guest today is Kathy Madonna Swift. She is the author, along with Joseph Hooper, of this new book called The Swift Diet: Mend the Belly, Lose the Weight, and Get Rid of the Bloat. Now, I know this is a lot of you have sent in questions about this, you know, and a lot of you have questions about digestive health, and you're smart. You've tried a lot of things, so we're going to find out more. Kathy is a very influential holistic nutritionist, and she also co-authored The Inside Tract, Your Good Guide to Great Digestive Health. She's recognized for her pioneering work in nutrition at three of the country's most prestigious health and wellness centers, Canyon Ranch, Kripalu, and Dr. Mark Hyman's Ultra Wellness Center. Her website is kathyswift.com, and that's spelled K-A-T-H-I-E. Swift.com. Thank you, Kathy, so much for being here.
Thank you, Joe. It's a pleasure to talk with you and your listeners today.
Well, we have so many questions, and I just decided to make the show all the questions, so we're going to launch right in. So first off, one of the questions that's common that people have, are there any accurate allergy tests out there for food allergies?
Well, as far as food allergies and adverse food reactions, there's a couple things to know. Food allergies and food intolerances are different. So allergies are immediate, can be life-threatening, and immune-mediated. You know, think peanut allergy, fish, shellfish allergy. Mm-hmm. And tests for that, docs might measure IgE levels, that's an immunoglobulin. They might also, an allergist might do skin prick testing. So could be helpful in some cases, but the more common food intolerances or food sensitivities, these can cause a number of symptoms, everything from headache to joint pain, digestive gut symptoms, and I'd like to tell you that there is a best test. It just doesn't exist yet. Hmm. We've explored all kinds of testing in our clinics, and interestingly, the gold standard is still an elimination diet, which includes a removal or avoidance phase of suspect food triggers, and then it's followed by, after a few weeks, generally about 4, maybe even longer, to 8 weeks, by a systematic reintroduction phase.
So you're saying that people, say somebody wonders about, let's just say gluten, and say they just wonder, yes, about it, and they're not testing as having celiac, but as we know, a lot of people are still sensitive to gluten. So you suggest they would take that out for as long as 4 weeks?
When it comes to gluten, a minimum of 4 weeks, yes. I would even suggest they go longer. And during that process, they would be monitoring using a food and symptom journal. And it's interesting with gluten. I mean, some people removing gluten within a few days, they feel remarkably better. For others, the process could take much longer. It really depends on the degree of insult, so to speak, that gluten's been doing to their system.
Now, in your book, you give people a lot more information, so I would recommend that all of you listen and get the book, and you can find out more about how to do that. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about leaky gut. What a name that is, right?
Yes, it is a name, and just a few years ago, if we use that term, if I were speaking at a medical conference, I'd probably
get laughed,
you know,
off the stage.
Laughed off the stage. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, now in the National Library of Medicine, the term leaky gut exists. It exists in textbooks of functional medicine and integrative medicine. It's also referred to as increased intestinal permeability. If you kind of think of your, we have this barrier that's in our intestinal tract, and it can get leaky. Think of a kind of a fishing net with a lot of holes in it. We do want some things to get through, important substances, but we don't want problematic ones to get through. And the best test to diagnose it that we use is called a lactulose mannitol test. And what this measures is the amount of these larger molecule sugars to smaller molecule sugars, and then you collect your urine. So if there's a high proportion of the big sugar, lactulose, to the smaller sugar, the mannitol, then we know that, you bet, it's leaked through the intestinal barrier.
And have you found there's a lot of confusion around how to actually heal it once you know that you have it? And some people are very adamant that you need to go on a more of a GAPS type of thing with the bone broths, and others say you don't, you know, go vegan. So I wondered what your experience was with that.
Okay. Well, therapeutic diets to heal the gut, I will say, Joe, it's as much an art as a science, and really is best in the hands of skilled nutritionists and clinicians. As far as healing leaky gut, there's no studies that I know of for the GAPS diet in the literature. The vegan diet has been well studied for a number of conditions, including a recent study out of Italy that hinted it may be helpful for our gut bugs. But there is a protocol that we use. It's called a 4R program, and to help heal leaky gut. And it's not linear. The 4Rs are, you know, what we do is we explore the person's history and such, and we remove problematic foods that we think are triggering. We also look at other things. I mean, has this person been on medications or over-the-counter, you know, things? Is there a lot of stress which can make the gut leaky? So the, you know, the first R is that. The second R we think about is replace. Are there some digestive factors that need to be, you know, brought back in this person's diet and such? Things, whether it's digestive enzymes or other you know, components. And then the third R is repopulate. Would the introduction of probiotic-rich foods or supplements be helpful in healing the leaky gut? And the other R is repair. There are what we call condition-specific nutrients that help heal the gut, things like glutamine and others. So what we do is really employ, use that model of thinking, and I will say that good news, there's definitely hope in healing a leaky gut.
How long does it take people generally to do that?
It really depends. I couldn't give you a set answer because everybody is biochemically unique and their digestive tracts are differently, but you know, if I were to estimate, I would say, you know, be patient, give it at least a good, you know, 3 months, and then generally we reassess. And but you know, for some people, it may take a bit longer.
And any of you listening who are dealing with, you know, health conditions or just are healthy and want to get healthier and explore diet, Kathy's available for private consultations as well, and you can find out more on her website. Kathy, a lot of the listeners and people here have been dealing with autoimmune diseases and conditions like chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, mercury, Lyme disease, and are pretty well-versed in a lot of this as well as big protocols, and yet in spite of eating whole food organic diets still have extremely high levels of inflammation. Do you have any tips?
Well, I do. I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is what's been missed, because I do work with many patients just as you've described, Joe, and I often find, and actually I require a 21-page questionnaire. I ask the person to write a little bit about their narrative, also to include food records and send me, you know, any labs or diagnostic tests that have been checked. And I often find that, yes, there are some things that perhaps the person has not explored or experimented with. And I'll go back to even thinking about that, you know, that 4R model of thinking clinically about the person. So I just want to really give your listeners hope. And it's actually how I got into this type of nutritional medicine myself. I mean, in the early 1980s, I was quite ill, diagnosed with an autoimmune condition, mitochondrial dysfunction. The list goes on and on. As we often say, there's usually not one thing. It's
right.
A whole list of problems. And I will just share that at 60, I'm healthier than I ever was. So
Oh, wow.
we have learned so much about how to cool these inflammatory processes, how, you know, to revitalize our mitochondria, how to, you know, manage autoimmune conditions, and food is powerful, powerful medicine. And I also want to add that the other things that I think are so important are the mind-body practices. How are we living our lives? Mm-hmm. And I know at one point I couldn't exercise at all. Mm-hmm. You know, when there's a true chronic fatigue syndrome,
right.
or,
right.
you know, in the UK they call it myalgic encephalomyelitis. I mean, it from the muscles to the brain, everything is affected.
Yeah.
But there definitely can be regeneration, and also the mind-body practices, whether it's meditation or I'm certified in Qigong, and I found that, you know, very, very helpful, guided imagery. So it's putting together really a holistic lifestyle plan. Certainly food is uh-huh. a critical component, but, uh-huh. but some of these other practices are also, and I don't want to fail to mention how important it is that we also evaluate nutritional status. You know, does this person have compromised B vitamin metabolism? Are they someone who requires much higher doses because of methylation issues of B vitamins? Magnesium, you know, so the nutritional assessment is really, really key in, again, restoring someone's health.
Have you ever worked with 23andMe or any of these genetic testing things to help people with the mitochondrial and methylation issues and so on?
Yes, yes. In fact, you know, again, I guess to share a little bit of my history, mm-hmm. I did uncover that I was homozygous for what's called the MTHFR mm-hmm. SNP. Mm-hmm. And so I was one of those people, and little did I know, that actually requires, you know, higher levels of B vitamins to kind of run this very, very important biochemical pathway that has so much to do with, you know, our energy, with our health in general, even our prevention of you know, some serious conditions. So
that's good to know. So if people choose to work with you, are you able to interpret those kind of results and help people with the methylation issues to put together the right program for themselves?
Yes, I can.
Do you believe that juicing is, you talk about mitochondrial adrenals, is juicing good for everybody to do, like, you know, these 3 to 5 day cleanses? Can that help anyone? Is it too hard on some people? What do you think about that?
Well, I think it can help someone. I don't think it's for everyone, and I've really been following the literature on what is referred to as fasting therapies. And there was even a consensus report. They do a lot of this in European countries and such. So I certainly have worked with patients on with respect to different types of fasting. I think where the weight of the evidence is really where you know, juicing and different types of juice fast can be helpful is certainly on rheumatic, you know, type conditions and such. So, you know, as you probably know and your listeners, there's many, many different types of, you know, juice fasts and cleanses out there.
Yeah.
And,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, and whether it's 1 day, 2 days, 5 days, or 30 days, I do think that working with someone who, you know, is skilled and knows what to monitor is important. But, you know, I've seen these as a, you know, even as a short-term therapy to jumpstart a healthier whole foods way of eating. So I think,
yeah.
you know, how we approach them with what intention and attention to certain things is really what's important.
When we talk about digestive health, okay, there's a wide range of digestive enzymes out there available. How do you know what you need? You need to be tested, and there's also the enzymes or the, what is it called, Bectane, that increases stomach acid, whereas in conventional medicine, they often are giving you things to block stomach acid. So it's confusing for people. What do you think?
Okay. Well, number one, stomach acid and enzymes are very, very important. And our pancreas are the workhorse here. They produce a number of enzymes for us. So, you know, how do you know if you need enzymes? Well, there is a test that we sometimes do that determines, that gives us a clue. Let me just say that. That gives us a clue, and that's actually the stool test, and it measures pancreatic elastase and markers of digestion. So if someone wanted to have that done, you know, it's available. But we can also just experiment. In other words, I would, again, through answering certain questions and a questionnaire, get an idea if I felt someone would benefit from digestive enzymes, you know, based on their history, their symptoms. Is it maybe just lactase to break down lactose that's needed? Is there evidence in the person's history of fat male digestion and absorption where something like lipase could be helpful? Or would we experiment with just a broad spectrum digestive enzyme that helps break down carbohydrates, proteins, fats, and even different types of fiber? So I, over the years, have basically done my due diligence with certain supplement companies. As you know, there's thousands out there to choose from. So I've come to trust and make recommendations for enzymes based on the companies that I've done my due diligence with. You know, the whole stomach acid thing, stomach acid is so important. Oh, gosh, and I think that, you know, the onslaught prescriptions of proton pump inhibitors and over-the-counter antacids and such, you know, the purple pills or whatever color, they've really done a number on us. I mean, if right now, you know, there was a bacteria, a virus that enters a room. I mean, they've even found that some people who were exposed to, you know, a particular foodborne, you know, bacteria and didn't get the foodborne illness. Why? Well, probably they had more stomach acid to ward it off. So it's very, very important. Stomach acid also helps us what? Break down proteins, and which are so critical for our health, that we're breaking down protein and utilizing it for all the functions it serves in the body. It also is helpful for, you know, the absorption of certain, you know, vitamins and such. Mm-hmm. So it's usually that we need our stomach acid. What can happen because of dysfunction in the sphincter, the little doorway that opens and closes, the acid or bile can reflux and cause problems. So, but it's not that, generally speaking, there's too much. It's more a motility disorder. So there, you know, and there's some things that we can do. In fact, Dr. Mullen and I in the Inside Track book, you know, talk about this. There are some things that can be helpful. There's some, you know, supplements that can be useful if someone has, for example, reflux, heartburn, and such. Things like DGL, which is a deglycerated licorice, and other things. So there's ways to help wean people off these over-the-counter and prescription medications that is going to, in the long run, be very, very instrumental in their health.
How does somebody get more alkaline and still have some organic meat in their diet if, say, they do better than that, than beans for protein?
Okay. Well, as far as getting more alkaline, the tried and true way to become more alkaline, and as you know, this has to do with the pH in the body, which, you know, your blood pH, your body knows how to keep it at a very, very critical level. But to become in a slightly more alkaline state, it's actually pretty simple. It's eating a plant-centered diet, a plant-powered plate. Vegetables and fruits promote this beneficial alkaline state. So it doesn't mean, for those of your listeners who enjoy some high-quality sourced meats, it doesn't mean that they have to give that up. Remember, we want to look at the totality of the diet. And if that, you know, meat, poultry, or fish is really more or less not the center of the plate, but the vegetables are, and you know, fruits are included, and other, you know, vegetarian protein sources. So I can almost guarantee that that person will be in a picture-perfect alkaline state.
I feel like we have so many questions. I'm going to start just going quickly through them and see if I can get some more out. People with fibromyalgia, they're dealing with a lot of pain on an ongoing basis. Can diet help to ease that pain?
Oh, Joe, absolutely. I used to know fibromyalgia quite well from a personal basis. Mm-hmm. And yes, again, the diet, an anti-inflammatory plant-based diet, I think like a pesco vegetarian would be, you know, for many people a wonderful approach. Also thinking about, is this person eating, are they eating, consuming things that are, you know, adding to the pain, and that's where the possibility of food intolerances come in, whether it's gluten or dairy or some other component, that needs to be explored. The other really important thing to think about, is this person short on nutrients, whether it's magnesium or, you know, vitamin D and other nutrients? It really should be assessed. That can make a huge difference in tamping down the pain. So actually, fibromyalgia, from my experience, is one of those conditions where employing food and nutritional support as medicine can be dramatically helpful.
Somebody wrote in saying, how can I test for candida to know if it's causing my health issues, and how do I treat it?
Okay, well, the first thing I think about with candida is that I would want to know more about the individual from even a what we call a nutrition-focused physical, signs and symptoms. Does this person have signs and symptoms of yeast overgrowth? As far as testing, there are some things that we take a look at. One, a doctor can do a blood test for candida antibodies. We can also, there's a urine test. It's called a urine organic acids, and there's a marker called D-arabinitol that has been associated with yeast overgrowth like candida. Mm-hmm. And we also might look in the stool and see if there's a significant amount of yeast in the stool. And I just want to say that, you know, some of my most debilitated patients have had yeast overgrowth. This is not hocus pocus. This isn't voodoo. Mm-hmm. It's real. And, you know, there's even medical papers, one called Yeast in the Gut from commensals, meaning an okay, beneficial, we do have some good yeast, to infectious agents. So I'm glad that question was asked. I do take it seriously.
Another question. Do you have any advice for someone healing pancreatitis or even, you know, cancers and different issues, any issues involving the pancreas?
Wow. Yes. Oh, boy, the pancreas, such a critically important organ. And certainly the things I would think about with pancreatitis would be, you know, is this when you're asking, is it acute or has it been chronic? I would, again, go back to this same 4R model of thinking. What needs to be removed? And in the case of pancreatitis, of course, things like alcohol and fats may not be, you know, tolerated at that point. What are we going to replace? We may add in, you bet, some enzymes that are going to be real helpful. We may add in something like MCT, medium chain triglyceride oil, that can again be very, very useful. So that's the approach I would begin to employ with healing pancreatitis.
I had a question. A lot of the doctors that I've talked to and seen in books like Terry Walls, who reversed her MS and autoimmune, they say really when you're healing adrenals, it's very important to have organic meat in your diet. I haven't really heard of many that say it's okay to be vegan or vegetarian. And I wonder what your experience is with that.
It's a great question. Truly, the first thing I think about in healing the adrenals is how is that person living their life. I think that, you know, we often, and as a nutritionist, of course, you know, I may be thinking food first, but in my experience, adrenal function has so much to do with lifestyle. As far as to include meat, must include in meat or a vegan diet, I've worked with patients with, you know, adrenal fatigue, who are both vegan, vegetarian, and meat.
A wide range.
Absolutely. I think what we have to really embrace is that different diets work for different people. There is no one way. And that's probably why you'll find in the Swiss diet, I really address nutrition from a broader lens. And I think that what I want to do is for this person with adrenal dysfunction is, you know, understand their story and really personalize both the food as medicine recommendations and the lifestyle modalities. Mm-hmm. And possibly the nutritional support, whether it's adaptogenic herbs short term or other things that really are going to be helpful for them. So I can't say it has to be, you know, a certain food prescription.
We know that when people do mercury hair tests, if the minerals come out all out of sync, that's a really high sign of high mercury levels. So mercury can be causing a lot of those vitamin and mineral imbalances and deficiencies as well. So I think working on getting mercury out is a big key for many people too.
Absolutely, absolutely. It is definitely something to assess, and sometimes not just mercury, but other toxic metals,
right.
You know, whether it's lead or such. And mm-hmm. even in our daily diets, if we think about getting the greens in, getting, you know, things like cylantro and parsley, getting the brassica vegetables in, getting citrus in, there's something, you know, that white fleshy part of citrus
right.
that is actually a source of pectin. And, you know, we use this to help bind, you know, toxic metals. So it's interesting that nature innately has provided some food-based solutions to this burden of metals. And in practice, we might even use supplements such as modified citrus pectin or others mm-hmm. in a mercury based protocol.
Well, there's so many more questions we could get to. I have a long list here in front of me we didn't even get to, but I'm so grateful for you to come on the show, and I want all of you listening to know that you can contact Kathy through her website at kathyswift.com. You can set up personal consultations and get help. I'm also, Kathy, I'm excited to know that you do work with mitochondrial issues and genetic issues. That's fantastic.
Thank
you so much for being on the show and for your book.
Well, thank you for having me, Joe, and I certainly hope your listeners enjoy the Swift Diet.
You've been listening to Zentertainment Talk Radio on the web at www.zentertainment.org. My name is Joe Davidson. I want to thank Kathy Madonna Swift so much for being here. And again, her book is called The Swift Diet: Mend the Belly, Lose the Weight, Get Rid of the Bloat. I'm excited to know that she offers personal consultations and she can help so many people with a wide variety of conditions to heal. So check her out, and I will catch you all next time. Thanks for being here.